Let's just chaz it quickly over the end of Ayin Ted Amud Bet, because we're in the middle of this sugya. Gemara wants to know, the Mishnah says, Rotze ach shenit arev be'acherim. Kulam, peturim, and Rabbi Yehuda mar kutzim lato the kippah. So in that statement, that Rotze ach shenit arev be'acherim, who are the acherim? And it's, we know who the Rotze ach is, because what are the acherim? So he first had Amir Raboam or Shmuel. So we're talking about a Rotze ach shelo nigmar dino. That was the case. We have Reish Lakish come along and say, well, with regards to Adam, with regards to a person, there's no question over here that you're patur, because it's lo nigmar dino. Over here we're talking about animals. We're talking about a shor shelo nigmar dino that got mixed up with shvarim achirim shen nigmar dinam. And that's what the machlokas is about over here. And the question is, how far does the hekesh go between behema and Adam? In that, do we compare the Baalim to the Mitat HaShor, or do we not compare the Baalim to Mitat HaShor? So along comes Rava, and asks questions of the last line here on Ayin Ted Amud Bet. I'm a Rava. Achi, anu diktani ala, I'm Rabbi Yosi, afilu abba chalafta b'neim. We have a braitha that says, on this Mishnah, that even if abba chalafta is amongst them. So according to the way that Rabbi Yebo and Reish Lakish are explaining the Gemara, abba chalafta hopefully has nothing to do with our Mishnah. Whether it's a gemar din of a rotzeach, or even shalom gemar din of the rotzeach, I mean that we don't expect Abba Chalafta to be here, and we don't even Abba Chalafta should make no difference in the case over here. And the same is true by the behema. Abba Chalafta is not even relevant by the behema. So Rava comes based on that brayta to explain this Mishnah in a totally different way. Omar Rava, Hochi Kamar. This is what the Mishnah is talking about. Shnayim Shayum Omdim. Two people were standing together. Beyatzach Chetz Mibneihem. An arrow shoots out from between them. As opposed to now, when we're talking about Rabbi Bo, and when we're talking about Reish Lakish, where we knew, at one point, we knew exactly who the murderers were, and we knew who this individual or the shore who we were trying to bring to trial or complete their trial, we knew who they were. But then it got mixed up. In this instance, Beis Din never knows who shot the arrow. Comes out from amongst two people, we know the arrow came from that direction, there are two people standing there, we don't know who shot the arrow. Barag, and end up killing someone. Shnehem Pturim. They are both Patur, because we don't know who shot the arrow. And Amar Rabbi Yossi, Achilu Abba Chalafta Bineyem. Even if one of those two people is Abba Chalafta. Now, if Abba Chalafta, who's a Hasid, a Tzaddik, right, of course, he's not the one who shot the arrow. Nevertheless, because there are two people there, and we don't have certainty as to whom shot the arrow, no Edim, therefore we cannot bring to trial either of the two parties. Then, Vishor Shnigmar Dino. So now we're going to continue with the position that Reish Lakish already opened up, that Shor Shenigmar Dino Shintarev Bishvarim Achirim Aliyo Soklinotan. So the if you have a Shor that had Nigmar Dino Shintarev Bishvarim Achirim Aliyo Soklinotan, we put them all to death. So now over here, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Kontzino Tol Kippah, that we put them in, we lock them up, and they starve. So what's the question here? The question one is that we have a Shor now that's Chayav Mita through Skila. Beis Din is supposed to stone the shore because it was Nigmar Dino for killing an individual. Now we have a separate bunch or group of Shvarim, which we have no interest in because they were fine. The Shvarim had nothing to do with us. We have no obligations towards them. The problem is that they got mixed up together. So they have two solutions here. One solution is to stone all the Shvarim. Why would you stone all the Shvarim? Well, you have one shore in there where there's a mitzvah to stone him. So if I stone all the Shvarim, I will also stone the shvur that I need to stone. If I do that, at least I've been mekayim that mitzvah. By the end, Yehuda comes along and says, what are you going to make Beis Din stone? 30 shvarim? And it's a huge process, it's a huge undertaking. It's a tircha for Beis Din. Rather, if we just lock them all up, kontzino ton kippah, and they all die, we still accomplished what we want, which is that they're asur b'ana. Right? We don't know what to do with them. If they're asur b'ana, there's no hefsed mamon to the Baalim over here, because nobody could use them anyway. So we just let them die instead of stoning them and putting Beis Din out to have to stone them. So that's the machlokas now in the Mishnah is about this idea of Shor Shenigmar Dino Shintarev Bishvarim Achirim Al Yosoklinotan. Rabbi Yehuda says, Kontzino Tol Kippah. Vatanyo. So now we have a Braisa here, Benichuta, in supporting this a concept of this explanation. Para Shemita. Rabbi Para that killed. Vachakach Yalda. Afterwards it gives birth. If it gives birth before the Gemar Din, before the sentencing, Vlada Mutar, then it's Vlad is Mutar. It doesn't become a Surbana. Once the sentence has already been handed down, then Yalda, it gives birth, Vladat Sur. Then it's, right, the baby that's born will be, or the calf that is born will be Asur. Nitarev Be'acherim, Be'acherim Be'acherim. That calf got mixed up with others, and then it with others and others. Kontzin Otan L'Kippah. Put them all in to starve. And then Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Mevin Otan L'Beis Din, B'Soklin Otan. Bring them to Beis Din, and we are Sokel them. So here we have, without are the names of the opinions in our Mishnah, but you have the exact same two deot here. The first day of the Tana Kama is Brighta, which would be the day of Rabbi Yehuda, which is Kontzin Otan L'Kippah. Here you have all these animals that are Asurim Be'ana. What do we do with that? Asurim Be'ana, what do we do with them? We say, but let them all die. There's nothing, no benefit to keeping them for the Baalim. There's no real tirch, it's a tremendous tirch on Beis Din to stone them all. So rather we just let them all die. And then we have no, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon come along. So it's good, it's the day after Lag Bomer. So Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, right, the son of Rabbi Shimon Yochai, telling us on the day after Lag Bomer, no, you still clean with them. Why? What's the benefit? Because then at least you stone the one chore that needs to be stoned. So stone them all. It's the same machlokas. So you see from here that this is the point of contention between them. Now, the question about, and which is what we're going to say now, is what exactly is the status of this baby or this calf? Why is the calf, if the calf is born before the Gemar Din or after the Gemar Din, why does that have an impact on whether it's considered to be Chayav Mita or not Chayav Mita? It says, Amamar, Imach lo nigmar dina yalda avlada mutaret vafa gav dechi nakcha. So wait a minute. The suggestion here is that even though the calf is born before the sentencing, but nevertheless the calf was inside the mother's womb, right, or inside the cow, at the time that she did the damage, at the time that she gored, the baby was there. Which means that they should be jointly liable for what happened. V'amarova, v'lada no gechet, asur. Right, so he, v'lada nachu. Rava makes a very simple statement that if a pregnant cow gores, then it's not just the cow itself that gored, it's the cow and the calf that will in the future be born that were goring together. Vlada nirbat, asur, hiv vlada nirbu. Again, if there's a fetus, if the calf is inside the mother, if they were, somehow there was bestiality performed on them, then they were the subject of, both of them are subject of this action. So therefore, they are both considered to be asurin.
Okay, it says vlad and not uba.
Right, but vlad here means eventually the baby's born, but it happens, the action happens when the calf is inside the mother, otherwise it doesn't make sense, and it's two separate actions, right? It has to be here that we're talking about a calf inside the mother's womb that is later born. Question is, what's a crime is either perpetrated when the calf is inside, or, I mean, a crime from the human standpoint on this animal, or the animal killing someone else has performed their gored while the calf was inside. So if that's the case, if they are considered to be jointly liable, or if they're going to be jointly, they are the victims of the crime, then over here, why is the birth before or after the Gemar Din relevant? Because even if it's born before the Gemar Din, the baby or the vlad should be responsible for the fact that it gored together with its mother. So Amos, so now we're going to amend the Breita to read this way. Imach lo nigmar dina ibra. If before the Gemar Din it became pregnant, v'yalda, and gave birth, I mean, there was enough time between the time of that it gored and the time that it was being brought to trial and sentence that the calf became impregnated and gave birth, v'lada mutar. And that claims the v'lad is mutar because it was neither there for the goring and it was not there for the sentencing. So the v'lad was not there for either of those two. Wasn't there for the perpetrating the crime, and it wasn't there for the sentencing. If after the Gemar Din she became impregnated v'yalda and gave birth v'lada asur, in that case the v'lad is asur. So now you have a totally separate. The case is that the entire pregnancy either takes place before the Gemar Din or after the Gemar Din. So if the entire pregnancy happened before the Gemar Din, but after the crime was committed, then in that case, the Ubar is Mutar. On the other hand, if the pregnancy happens entirely after the Gemar Din, then the Ubar is Asur because the Ubar was conceived right at the time that the mother was Asura Behana, or no, she was already being sentenced to death. Right now, the reason, obviously, or the way Rashi reads it, we'll see that there's an alternative opinion, but the way Rashi reads it, the reason that the Ubar in all these cases is considered to be either jointly liable or sentenced along with the mother is because Ubar Yerech Imo. Right? That the ubar is just an extension of the mother. It's an additional limb to the mother. So that we basically, the ubar is the mother. It only becomes a separate entity when it's born. But as long as it's inside the mother, it's considered as part of the mother. And therefore, if the mother was the one who committed the crime or perpetrated the crime here of killing the individual, or the mother is the one sentenced to death, and the baby's inside at that point in time, then you sentence the mother with all her limbs to death, or the mother with all her limbs did the damage. So this baby is just considered to be one of the limbs of the mother. Now, Gemara says, asur. That makes sense according to the one who says that when you have zeh b'zeh goreim, when you have two drivers as to why something happens, it's still asur. Mutar. When it says when you have two drivers, right, that is mutar, ma yikal lemeimar. What are you going to say in this case? Because beforehand, there's nothing to talk about. Before the Gemara Din, the baby was, or the calf was impregnated, conceived after the crime was committed, and before the sentencing. So in that case, we're not talking about zeh b'zeh goreim. We're just talking about a ubar that is born in that window of opportunity. That ubar should be completely mutar. The problem we have is at after the sentencing. After the sentencing, the cow is now found impregnated. The cow cannot become impregnated by itself. The cow, the vlad that is born to this cow, is a joint effort of the father that sires it, the male, and then the female. So in that case, you have zeh b'zeh goreim. You have the mother who's a surabana, that is, right, has carrying the calf. But on the other hand, there's the father, who's totally mutar, who impregnated her. So you have zeh b'zeh goreim. So now, if you say zeh b'zeh goreim, that the vlad should still be asur, you can explain this whole, you can use this explanation of the braita. But if you leave zeh b'zeh goreim, when there are two factors that gave, or happened to contribute to what happened, then you have to question over here. Here you have a father and a mother. The mother's asurah, the father's mutar. Why should the vlad be automatically asur? So then,
is that the meaning of zeh b'zeh goreim? It's not like the vlad itself, like in the case that the gourd while the mother was pregnant.
Could say that, but that's the Gemara is already moved from that answer. The Gemara is not there anymore. Two is, if you really believe Ubar Yerchimo, then it isn't zeh b'zeh goreim.
It's
one entity, right? It's one entity. If you look at the Tosos on the top here, the top right Tosos says Nira the ha choshev lezeh goreim hainu keman da amar choshishim lezeh rav. That's what the zeh b'zeh goreim here is, because you have two, the mother and father are separate entities, and we're choshev lezeh rav, right? Now, the Gemara says, okay, Ella Amar Ravina. So now we're going to make our third attempt to, right, explain this braitha, which is, Im ad shelo nigmar dina ibra. If before the Gemara Din she was pregnant, V'yalda, and gave birth, V'yalda mutar. That we don't have a problem with. V'im ad shelo nigmar dina ibra. Oh no, she became impregnated before the Gemara Din. Right? And then, Mish nigmar dina yalda, gave birth afterwards, V'yalda asur. Why? Ubar yerech imo. So over here, the problem, or we solve the problem by having it be not zeh b'zeh goreim. After the Gemara Din, you have zeh b'zeh goreim, because you have a father and a mother who is sentenced to death, and a father who is fine. The here, what we've changed is that the cow became impregnated before the Gemara Din. It's impregnated before the Gemara Din, and then only gives birth after the Gemara Din. Why is that not zeh b'zeh goreim? Because the calf is now already present inside the mother at the time of the Gemara Din, at the time of the sentencing. If the ubar is in the mother at the time of the sentencing, and ubar is yerechimo, what does it mean that ubar yerechimo? It means that they were both sentenced to death. The mother, as a whole entity, is sentenced to death. The mother, as a whole entity, includes all of her limbs. One of those limbs happens to be the ubar that's inside of her. So again, here, when the cow became impregnated, they were both mutarim, both the father and the mother. So we're not talking about zeh b'zeh goreim, because the goreim is not the problem over here. The problem over here is that they were sentenced to death. They were sentenced to death while the ubar was inside of the mother. And because of you, ubar yerechimo, it was as if you sentenced the whole entity to death. If you sentenced the whole entity to death, even if they separate afterwards, they're still all, right, liable. And they'll still all require the death penalty. So that's the explanation of the braita. Now, we've explained the braita. So now we explain the machlokas in our Mishnah. The machlokas in our Mishnah revolves around this shor that is niskal. That we have sure that Nigmar Dino, that should be Niskal, they got mixed up with other Shvarim. And that Mishnah will explain the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tana Kama in our Mishnah. Then we had a Braita that says that Gmar Din is somehow a threshold for the Ubar inside of the cow. And then when we spoke about it, we wanted to determine, what does that mean? That the Ubar is inside, or what happened here? So we gave one try. You know, I mean, the pashut pshat was that the baby was either born before or after the gemar din. We said, well, that doesn't solve the problem because if the animal was pregnant with the baby beforehand, Rava says that they're jointly liable for the crime. So we have to eliminate the factor that the ubar was there at the time of the crime. So then we said, no, okay, the threshold is gemar din. She either became impregnated or gave birth before or after the gemar din. Gemara says, then you have a problem in zevzeg gorim. So Gemara says, finally said, no, the impregnation happened after the crime, before the gemar din. The question is when the baby was born. If the baby's born before the gemar din, then of course the baby's mutar because they had nothing to do. It wasn't there at the crime, wasn't there at the sentencing, so there's nothing to talk about. If the cow becomes impregnated before the gemar din, and then the gemar din happens, the sentencing of death is the entire cow. The entire cow includes everything inside of it, including the baby. Therefore, when the baby's born after the gemar din, the baby is subject to the same death penalty as the mother. And that's called ubar yerechimal. Rabbeinu Tam, over here, he asks a very simple question. He says, listen, we don't paskin ubar yerchimo in so many other places. Why over here, all of a sudden, we're using a concept called ubar yerchimo to explain the Gemara? So Rabbeinu Tam says, that says Mefarsh, the b'chol duchtei kaimelan delav yerchimo. Throughout Shas, he has numerous examples here where we don't hold that ubar is yerchimo. So what are we doing over here? So he says, v'hainu, over here, a time when the came dad achshav ayachiyut, havlad, talui be'im, avilu kiil, gmar din shneem, hariga. V'lam shum dahave yerechimo. Where he says, nothing to do with yerechimo. It's not ubar yerechimo in the classic sense of ubar yerechimo, like you would lose it throughout other places in Shas, where we pass against love yerechimo. The ubar yerechimo over here is because the ubar is dependent on the mother for its sustenance. And over here, when there's a sentencing of death, if you're going to kill the mother, the ubar would automatically die. Since the ubar is dependent on the mother for its being sustained, therefore, if you kill the mother, you're going to kill the ubar. So the sentencing to death of the mother is also a sentence to death of the ubar. Even though later on the ubar separates and is able to get independence from the mother, the time of the sentencing, the death sentence for the mother is also a death sentence for the ubar. The way the Rabbeinu Tam's reading, yeah, it says ubar lav reichimo. It's very hard. That's not like use the terminology that's well known throughout Shas, but Rabbeinu Tam is trying to deal with there are many other places where the Gemara is very obvious to go against this position. Right now, kol chayve mitot. All right, so now we're talking about all these chayve mitot. Shema mina mutra l'davar chamur avi mutra l'davar kal. We're talking about hatra over here. Warning: someone is warned that they're going to receive a death penalty for their action. If they warn them for the higher form, or something that would be a worse death penalty, subsumed in that is also the lower death penalty. Because over here we have a case where we have numerous possibilities that people are going to be put to death. Right? So in this case, when you give hatra'ah, you're going to have to give hatra'ah that includes the other possibilities. So what is that? So I'm Rabbi Yirmiyahu. How come my skin? What's the case here? Kagon shehitru bo stam. The case was they gave stam hatra'ah. Ba'atainahu. And this tano is this tano that we know from the Brice to the Tanya. B'shar chai ve'mito shibatorah. Ein me'mitin otan ela be'ida ve'idim v'hatra'ah. That the requirements to put somebody to death in the Torah require ida, which is 23. Idim requires two idim. V'hatra'ah, and a warning. You just have to indicate to them that this will be subject to a penalty in court, meaning that a death penalty by the court. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that you have to specify the exact mita that's being given. So Tanakama yell with Mikoshesh. Tanakama learns out Mikoshesh Etzim. By the Kosheish Eitzim, what happened by the Kosheish Eitzim? What do they have to do? He goes, he's Mechalal at the Shabbos, and then what do they do with him? Right? They didn't know what to do with him. So over there, when the Kosheish Eitzim goes into the Mishmar, they didn't know what to do with him. They knew what to do with him. He had a death penalty. He was violated the Shabbos. So what didn't they know? They didn't know which death penalty. So if they didn't know which death penalty, how could they very put him to death? They warned him. What did they warn him? You're subject to the one of the debates in the death penalties. So that's the proof. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mikoshesh, Horat, Sha'ah, Haita. So that's the other answer. Mikoshesh is an unusual case. They didn't know the din yet. When you don't know the din yet, you can't expect people to give Hatra'ah for the specific mitah, because that wasn't given already. Once you know the specific mitah, then we demand of you not only to give the right? Not only to give or to say that there's a death penalty by Beis Din, but we all insist a specific type of death penalty. But that's subject to a machlokas. So our Mishnah, or this instance over here, when we're talking about chayvei mitot, we're going according to the Tanakhama, who says that the requirement for hachra'ah is simply that you say that there is a death penalty, not that we specify which death penalty that the individual will get. So that's why it says, kol chayvei mitot she'arvu ze bezeh nidonim bekala. We give them the lower form, because even though they were warmed for a higher form of mitah, nevertheless we can give them the lower form of punishment, because it's subsumed in the higher form of punishment. So that hachra'ah will work over here, even though the death penalty given to them is different than what which we warned them. Right, haniskalim benisrafim. Over here we had those that should be stoned got mixed up with those that were going to be burnt. So now, matni le Rabbi Yechezkel the Rami Berei. So Rabbi Yechezkel was laying out for his father, this Mishnah, or whether it's a Bryce or a Mishnah. Hanisrafim beniskalim, the opposite of what we have in our Mishnah, right? Here he's saying the Nisrafim got mixed up with the Niskalim. Shimon Omer, Yedunu Biskila. Shimon says Skila because Shimon believes that Sreifa Chamura. The Sreifa is the most Chamur punishment over here. And again, as David pointed out, of Minyana Dioma, right, that Lag BaOmer, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, is Sreifa is the Chamura, so therefore we burn the whole country. So here we have a Sreifa Chamura, right, over here. That, so therefore you give them the lower of the two punishments, which is Skila. So Amar Leih Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda speaks up. Now Rabbi Yehuda is also son of Rabbi Yechezkel. So his brother Rami and Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda pipes up when he's teaching his brother, right, that Rabbi Yechezkel is teaching his father, is teaching his brother. Abba, lo titnei hachi. Abba, don't say this. My area the sreifa chamura. The way you're explaining the Mishnah, this Braisa, why is it that the reason for Rabbi Shimon over here is because sreifa is chamura? Typically, deruba niskalim ninu, just say that the rove are for skila. Why? Because let's look at the way that the difference between what Rabbi Yechezkel said and our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, Haniskalim ben Nisrafim. If I made to a statement that Haniskalim got mixed up with the Nisrafim, which do you think is the majority and which is the minority over there? So you would usually say that, I'll call you the denominator, the ones that got mixed in are the minority, and they got mixed up with the majority. So in that case, in our Mishnah, you have the Niskalim, which are the minority, getting mixed up with the Nisrafim, which are the majority. So in that case, if Rabbi Shimon comes and says that they should get Skila, that's a Chiddush. The reason that Rabbi Shimon says that they get Skila is must be because he believes that Skila is the Yoter Kal, the lower of the two punishments, because otherwise you should go with the majority, and the majority is for Sreifa. But the way Rabbi Chesko made the Mishnah, his Mishnah read like this, Hanisrafim ba Niskalim. The Nisrafim got mixed up with the Niskalim, which meant the minority is the Nisrafim and the majority is the Niskalim. So now I say to you, Rabbi Shimon believes they should get stoned. Rabbi Shimon's opinion could be derived for two reasons. One is because the Niskalim are the majority. If they are the majority, that's why they get Skila. Or because Rabbi Shimon believes that the Skila is the lower form of punishment. The way you're reading the Mishnah, my father, Rabbi Chezkel, we don't know. The reasoning for Rabbi Shimon is not clear. Because it could be because of Rov, it could be because of Skila is Yoter Kal. So therefore, read the Mishnah like the way we have it written. So there, Elohechi etne, how should you write it? Aniskalim ben Nisrafim. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Yaduna b'skila she sreifa chamura. So he says, Yoche ema seifa. That what are you going to do with the seifa? Chamimim, Yaduna b'sreifa she skila chamura. Chamim say that you get sreifa, not skila, because sreifa is the lower of the two punishments. Well now, if our Mishnah reads Aniskalim ben Nisrafim, what's the majority? The majority is sreifa or Nisrafim. If the majority is Nisrafim, typically deruba Nisrafim ninu. Let's say that the reasoning for the Chachamim is not because they believe Sreifa is Yoter Kal, but because they are the rove in the mixture over here. So Hatam, Rabbanon hu dekamer le Rabbi Shimon. No, at that point in the Mishnah, the Rabbanon are responding to Rabbi Shimon. Lididach damart Sreifa chamura, right? Lo skila chamura, lo right. So skila, lo skila chamura. That you who said that sreifa is more chamura, you're wrong. Skila is more chamur. So they're responding to Rabbi Shimon. So here you can't ask the question of Chachamim that the Mishnah tells us that the Nisrafim are the majority, and that's why they give it. They're not the one addressing the case. They're addressing Rabbi Shimon's statement on the case. When they address Rabbi Shimon's case on the case, his statement is give them skila. I'm saying, what are you talking about? You don't give them skila, you give them sreifa. And they're speaking in the context of Rabbi Shimon, not because of the robe, they're responding to Rabbi Shimon. They say, you think that skila is your terkal? No, sreifa is your terkal, and you have it all backwards. So then, Amar Lei Shmuel to Rabbi Yehuda Shinina. Shmuel speaks to Rabbi Yehuda Shinina here, the son of Rabbi Chezkel, and says, I just, you know, you happen to be right.
Right,
Shinina is an adjective.
It's not a comment that Shmuel is saying to
the Rebbe. It is, even different places in Shas brings down different explanations, but Shinina, Shinina is either that he was very sharp, okay, that Rebbe Yehuda Shinina, the sharp Rebbe Yehuda, or Rebbe Yehuda Shinina is something about his teeth, that he had either some big teeth or long teeth. So they described him that, you know, Rebbe Yehuda Shinina is the one with the, Rebbe Yehuda with the teeth. Maybe that was a descriptor, but either way, it's an adjective to describe Rabbi Yehuda over here, Rabbi Yehuda over here, Rabbi Yehuda here, who Shinna, that who is the son of Rabbi Chezkel. He says to him, "Listen, lo temalei la vuchachi. You spoke inappropriately to your father. You happen to be right. You happen to be right, Rabbi Yehuda, when you corrected your father, but you did it in the wrong manner." Tatanya, Arei Shaya Aviv Over Al Divrei Torah. His father, for whatever reason, is violating Divrei Torah. Lo Yomer Lo Abba Vart Al Divrei Torah. You don't explicitly go and say to him, "Listen, my father, you're violating the Torah." Right? Ella Omer Lo. Say to him, "Abba Kach Ktiv Ba Torah. This is what's written in the Torah." I says, "So Fine Ohach." Same thing. But you say to him, wait, whether you say to him you're violating the Torah, you just say, "Hey, let me quote the pasuk for you." You're telling him the same information. It's not that you're not. So, Ella, Omelo, Abba, Mikra, Ketuba, Torah, Kach. You have to do it in a way that is indirect. Right, it's not so, but it's a little bit different. Right, that's the Gemara, as you see, Rashi says, Ella ben Ichuta. Maybe it wasn't clear that this is an answer over here. But the Ichuta is, Omelo, Mikra, Hamur, Batorav, Omelo, Ab. Let the father come to make the conclusion. Don't say directly to your father, "Do not learn the Mishnah this way." You say, "I learned from someone else," or "I learned the Mishnah in this manner." Let the father then put two and two together so they come to the conclusion. So also here, don't say, "Father, you're being over divrei Torah." Don't say, "The Torah says such and such," directing it, "Abba, kach ktiba Torah," which is directing the father and saying you're doing something wrong. And again, you're doing it not by saying you're doing something wrong, but just saying it, the pasuk says this, by saying the pasuk. Rather, you say, "Omelo Abba, mikra katub b'Torah," there is such a pasuk in the Torah. Right? And then the father can try to draw the conclusion from that. So the more indirect, the better. Obviously, you're trying to get the message across. You have to get the information to him, but you have to do it in such a manner that you're not directly soter your father, because that would be a violation of, right, ira, mora'av. Mora'av requires one not to soter, not directly contradict the word of the father. So in this case, where you are justified in doing, you have to do it in a manner where it's not a direct contradiction, but in a manner that allows the father to come to the same conclusion that as if you had contradicted him, but without obviously and openly contradicting your father. All right, we'll stop over here. Sorry.